Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thanks for joining us.
Coming up on the program, South Sudan has asked the United States to reconsider the sanctions it has imposed on three senior government members and a former fish and tree companies. We hear from an analyst.
As long as they see you that you are obstructing peace in this country and you don't want to listen to what the international community is saying, they can go after your neck.
A court in Kenya declines to suspend a new electoral team after both President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga's party expressed their dissatisfaction over its composition. We hear from a correspondent.
Ordinary Kenyans are just surprised because as the clock ticks away to the election day, all they want is just to vote.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But before we go into the details, here's a chance to hear what's been taking place around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. We start off in Tanzania, where an opposition leader has been shot and injured by unknown people in his home in the capital, Dodoma. Tundu Lissu, the opposition chief whip in parliament, has been a strong critic of President John Magufuli. The motive for the shooting is still unclear, although Lissu has previously been arrested by police on several occasions and charged with incitement. Speaking to DW's Kiswahili service, the Dodoma police commander confirmed that no arrests have been made so far. 10 people have been confirmed dead as Hurricane Irma causes a trail of destruction across the Caribbean. 8 among the dead are from the Franco-Dutch island of St. Martin, which is the worst affected. Irma is ranked as a Category 5 extremely dangerous hurricane with winds of around 175 miles in an hour. Different countries are stepping up financial and humanitarian aid to help those affected. Here is British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
I want to stress that this has been a very, very severe hurricane, but we are responding with all the means at our disposal. Royal Fleet Auxiliary Mounts Bay, the ship Mounts Bay, is in the region with humanitarian supplies. We have experts on hand in the region, and we are now stepping up our effort, both financial and humanitarian, to deal with the crisis as it unfolds.
Evacuation orders have already been issued in several states in the U.S., including some parts of Miami and Florida. For the second day running, huge crowds have turned out in Togo's capital, Lome, to demand political reform. This is the largest opposition protest against President Faure Gnassingbé, who has been in power since 2005. The demonstrators want constitutional reform, including limiting the president to 2 5-year terms. The son of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has denied involvement in a drug smuggling operation. Paulo Duterte told a Senate inquiry that claims he helped ship drugs from China to the Philippines were baseless and meant to tarnish his image and that of his family. Last year, President Duterte launched a strong campaign against drugs shortly after he came to power.
In compliance with the invitation of this honorable committee and as a gesture of respect to the Senate as a whole, once and for all, I now have the time to deny any allegations thrown against me. Allow me to quote a message from a colleague of mine in the City Council of Davao. Every dog has his day. The law of karma will operate specially to those with evil intent.
You're listening to DW News from Bonn, Germany. A report released today by the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, shows that marginalization and weak governance have pushed young Africans to join extremist groups. The UN researchers interviewed almost 500 young Africans who voluntarily joined extremist groups, including Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram. Recruits also talked of being frustrated and neglected, with few economic prospects and little opportunity for meaningful civil participation. For more news and information, visit our website, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyingi.
Welcome once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
We begin the program in South Sudan, where authorities have asked the United States to reconsider the sanctions it has imposed on two senior government members, a former official, and three companies. According to Foreign Ministry spokesman Mawen McCall, the sanctions announced on Wednesday, I quote, "very unfortunate." The U.S. imposed sanctions on Deputy Defense Chief Malik Rubin, Information Minister Michael McQuay, and former Military Chief of Staff Paul Malong. They are accused of undermining peace, security, and stability in South Sudan, where a civil war has raged for 4 years. From Juba, Wake Wudu sent this report.
The sanctions include blocking all the entities' assets of the three individuals that are within U.S. jurisdiction, and U.S. persons are being prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. The three officials have also been suspended from entering into the U.S. South Sudan Information Minister, also government spokesperson Michael McQuay, said he is not yet in position to comment on the report.
I don't respond to claims in the social media, but we wait for the official communication by the American government to the government of the Republic of South Sudan. It is thereafter that we will respond.
The three officials are accused of having engaged in actions or policies that threaten the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. They are also accused of initiating actions or policies that have the purpose or effect of aggravating the conflict in South Sudan, hence obstructing reconciliation and peace talks processes. James Okuk, a political lecturer at the University of Juba, said the move by the U.S. government was long overdue, and South Sudanese leaders should know that the world is keeping track of what is happening on the ground.
There has been warning several times that this is not acceptable, especially the war must stop and all this. And whoever is trying his best to obstruct the humanitarian delivery also should stop and all this. All these warnings have been along, but they went on deaf ears.
Okuk says the move also should act as a warning to countries that interfere in the South Sudan's peace process.
The fact that you have one politician in and you have also one former army general in the list, it tells you that nobody is left out. As long as they see you that you are obstructing peace in this country and you don't want to listen to what the international community is saying, they can go after your neck.
That report was filed by Wake Wudu. Now, on social media platforms, Iguachu tweeted and said the U.S. sanctions on the South Sudanese leaders was over allegations that they have been profiting from the war. He used the hashtags conflict, hashtag condemn, and hashtag corruption.
And now for the latest on Hurricane Irma. The Category 5 storm, which is currently devastating the Caribbean and is forecasted to reach the U.S. mainland this weekend. The storm has sustained wind speeds of up to 300 kilometers an hour, making it the most powerful ever recorded in the Atlantic. It has already caused immense destruction, with a reported death toll so far at 10 people. Jake Davis reports.
Barbuda, an island in the Caribbean Sea with a population of only around 1,600 people, and now victim of the most ferocious storm. Hurricane Irma has damaged 95% of properties on the island, with up to 30% of them completely demolished. Over half of Barbuda's inhabitants have been left homeless. Barbuda's Prime Minister Gaston Brown, speaking in the aftermath of the storm, lamented the unprecedented ferocity with which it hit his island home.
Absolutely devastating. In fact, I believe that on a per capita basis, the extent of the destruction in Barbuda is unprecedented.
The sheer force of Hurricane Irma has caught many Caribbean islands unprepared. Carlos Arenas Lopez, head of Oxfam in the Dominican Republic, which the hurricane passes over today, told Deutsche Welle earlier how some islanders are still awaiting evacuation.
Most part of the people are leaving because the Dominican Republic First Minister has used a mandatory order. There are a small part of the most vulnerable people that they are still in their homes, and the police in the next hours will be evacuate them.
The hurricane is traveling in a northwesterly direction and is forecasted to hit the U.S. mainland on the weekend. Residents of Florida are bracing themselves for the storm after the governor, Rick Scott, declared a statewide emergency, warning people to take it seriously.
Every Floridian should take this seriously and be aggressive to protect their family. Possessions can be replaced, your family cannot. Is life threatening? This is not a storm you can sit and wait through.
With two more hurricanes nearing the North American continent, Katia is currently in the Gulf of Mexico, while Hurricane Jose is in the open Atlantic, experts warn that climate change will lead to more severe storms in the future, albeit a smaller overall number. Professor Uwe Ilbricht of the Berlin Free University.
The models that we are using to predict or to estimate the effects of climate change, what they are saying is that there could be more strong hurricanes. However, at the same time, they say there are less hurricanes in total in the future.
Jake Davies with that report.
Now to Kenya, where the political storm is far from over following a controversial presidential election that prompted the Supreme Court to nullify it and order a repeat. Today, the chief executive officer of Kenya's Electoral Commission, Ezra Chiloba, filed a case in court seeking to prevent the electoral body from sacking him and five other senior officials. But the court declined his request and instead summoned all the concerned parties in the electoral process on the 20th September this year. A short while ago, I spoke to our Nairobi correspondent, James Shimanyula, for the latest. Take a listen.
The Employment and Labour Relations Court in Nairobi has declined to stop the Electoral Commission from sacking Chiloba, the chief executive officer of the Electoral Commission, and his five other colleagues. The court has served the commission's chairman, Wafula Chebukati, with a summon to appear there on the 20th of this month for hearing. Both parties have to be there.
It looks like the Electoral Commission is pitted against the presidential candidates. On one side, there is President Uhuru Kenyatta, and on the other side, there is the opposition leader, Raila Odinga. What's going on in Kenya, James?
What is going on here is that there were names that were suggested by Kenyatta so that they can be taken to replace new officials of the commission, and then other three names from Odinga. But Mr. Chebukati refused to accept the names, saying very clearly that the commission is independent and no authority and no one can actually dictate what the commission should do. In fact, he went to the extent of saying that Article 249 of Kenya's constitution makes it clear that the Electoral Commission shall not be subjected to direction or control by any person or any authority.
James, you've been monitoring the situation on the ground since Kenyans went to the polls. I mean, in the wake of all this political drama, if I may say, what are ordinary Kenyans saying?
Ordinary Kenyans are just surprised because at the turn of every hour, as the clock ticks away to the election day, all they want is just to vote.
I was speaking to James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Now, Kenyans have been busy on Twitter following the latest tug of war within and surrounding the IEBC. Well, read some of the comments, please.
Yes, Isaac, we have one from Sammy Kalintosh who says, this whole IEBC fiasco shows why NASA are right on calling for the UN to conduct the presidential elections.
And just a few moments ago, the IEBC CEO Ezra Chiloba, who was sidelined, also tweeted today saying, let it be known that I have not instructed anyone to go to court on my behalf on any matter. We make progress if we avoid sideshows.
Daphne Mikwali says, the latest inquiries show how IEBC were not prepared and we are careless in handling elections. Why isn't Uhuru Kenyatta angry at them?
And Mandwario says, if the IEBC is an independent body, then why were ghosts logging into your system? Will you use police to chase agents from polling stations?
Lloyd Onyango says, in Kenya, someone can even steal sugar from your tea and then tell you it is the will of God.
Well, that's interesting. Stealing, you know, someone's sugar from your tea and they tell you it's the will of God. Anyway, yeah. Many thanks for those comments that you keep on sending on our stories, just like we've been promising in the previous shows. Keep them flowing, especially on this particular story about Kenyan elections that is developing every now and then. Our correspondents in Nairobi, Mombasa, everywhere are just on the outlook to see of any developments. And we'll always bring you the story, break it here, read your comments, right, Zipporah?
Right, Isaac, that's what we are.
Yeah, keep the fun flowing. And you can write the comments, DW Africa, that's our Facebook page.
Welcome back once again to the program. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, childless women in Uganda speak about their plight and trauma, much of it inflicted on them by in-laws.
They put my husband under a lot of pressure to get rid of me. And out of this, we have had problems, so many problems, and they have even called me names. They have called me a total loss.
Well, you've been commenting on this story about childless women in Uganda, and we'll try to read as many as we can right here on Africa Link.
But first to Togo, thousands marched through the streets of the capital Lome for the second day running, calling for President Faure Nyasimbe to step down. The opposition has been calling for constitutional reforms and an end to Nyasimbe dynasty, who took over succeeding his father, Nyasimbe Eyadema, who had ruled for nearly four decades. Mobile internet services were off where protests were planned. I spoke to Alex Vines, head Africa program at Chatham House in London, and he started off by describing the situation in Togo. Take a listen.
Well, there's been demonstrations in Togo, so it's tense. There were significantly larger demonstrations in August, and some of them were violent. This time, the demonstrations look more peaceful, but there's tension on the streets of Lomé, the capital of Togo in particular.
So you said the protests are peaceful. Do we expect to see more reaction from the government?
This time round, the government is hoping to manage the demonstration. As you know, the Cabinet of Togo yesterday approved a draft bill which includes electoral reforms such as the reintroduction of presidential term limits for Togo. So any future president in Togo going forward can only stand for two terms of 5 years. Now, that plan has been planned for a while. In fact, President Eyadema had been encouraging it. So the only thing that's happened is that decision's been brought forward. The question, though, is that President Eyadema will face elections again in 2020, and he could argue that under a new constitution, he will be able to run at least for two more terms if he wanted to do that. And obviously, that's something that the protesters wouldn't be interested in. So there is the question mark over whether he will think of running again.
Well, talking of the cabinet meeting which approved plans for a bill about restrictions on terms in office, we know the opposition thinks this is not enough. Do we know why?
Well, the opposition wants things to move quickly. They are disadvantaged. I mean, remember that the party of government, the Union pour la République, dominates the legislature. It has 62 of the 91 seats in the National Assembly, and it has rejected most of the bills introduced by the opposition so far. And the opposition will feel that this cabinet approval of term limits is at least a sign that the government is increasingly nervous and that they can get more compromise. What's happened in Togo yesterday is significant because it does now mean that the whole of the economic community of West African states, every state in ECOWAS, that basically respects two-term mandates. And that's strategically important for West Africa, obviously, but it's also a really important precedent for the whole continent. One thing that I've not heard people talking about is that President Eyadema, he's a relatively young man. He's in his early 50s, but from my understanding is he's not that healthy. I think one of the things he had been considering was how to get a soft landing. It could be that Eyadema doesn't have the vision to go on indefinitely as president and is looking for maybe a face-saving soft landing process for himself in the run-up to the next election, 2020.
So do you think the situation might get out of hand, like was the case years back?
There is still, I think, the president remains still with a strong grip on power. I'm not sure that there is a strong incentive for the loyalty of the security forces to move away from President Eyadema currently.
Alex Vines. I was talking to Alex Vines, the head of Africa program at Chatham House in London. And of course, we have been getting your responses about this issue. Slim Sugar Frank says, this is slavery and can only be found in the 20th, not the 21st century. Let the Togolese continue to protest and change the status quo.
Roderick Domest says, may God bless DW. Oh, thank you for that. And all Africans around the world. Togo people hurt France because France, ECOWAS, AU are the causes of all this in Togo. Remember, these are your comments that you are reading.
Orlando Newman says, wake up, my people. The power lies in your hands. Too many of your precious citizens are turning elsewhere for survival when your country can be made greater.
And Dubest Emma says, it's long overdue. Africans need to demand for better lives in their continent from their leaders. It's time to stop running from our government when they indirectly want to make us to seek better living in Europe.
Speaking out.
Now, in Uganda, women who are struggling to bear children continue to be ostracized and command no respect in society. In some instances, these women are despised and eventually divorced because they are regarded as outcasts. In a patriarchal society like Uganda, women have little to say about such unforeseen circumstances. But medical doctors say infertility not only affects women, but also men. From Kampala, Frank Iga sent this report.
Hallelujah. In 3 days, your trouble is coming.
Praying every day for divine intervention is what Rebecca Atim resorted to, hoping that one day God will answer her prayers and give her a child. She told me that for the last 10 years, she has been trying to get a child but has not been successful. What hurts her most, she tells me, are her in-laws, who keep on tormenting her to get a child or quit her marital home.
They put my husband under a lot of pressure to get rid of me. And out of this, we have had problems, so many problems, and they have even called me names. They have called me a total loss in their family just because I do not have children. And you know what? They do not allow me to touch on their children, not even greeting, just because I don't have children.
For Agnes Tumuhimbise, it's a different story. For 15 years, together with her husband, they tried for a child but failed. Like any other women, Tumuhimbise was traumatized by her in-laws, which prompted her to seek medical tests. To her shock, results showed that it was her husband who was infertile. But the news came in too little too late because her husband had left her for another woman.
Imagine, it was him barren and not me. I wasted all those years suffering for nothing. It is good he left. I wouldn't have known it wasn't me with the problem. I'm now happily blessed with 3 children. You see, I'm pregnant again.
And what do men think about women who find themselves of not having children as soon as the wedding bells go silent? Daudi Dungu, a shoeshiner on Naboa Road in Imbale Town, told me that he is not yet married and there is no way he can move in with a woman who cannot bear him children.
Every man's dream, especially when you're planning to marry someone, find a companion, you want to have kids at one moment, because that's the next step after marriage. If I realize a woman can't give me children, I don't think I'll go on with the relationship. I'll find ways of getting someone who can give me children.
At Mulago Hospital in Kampala, I meet Dr. Obura James to discuss more about infertility in both men and women. He says it is categorized into primary and secondary infertility. However, both men and women should not totally lose hope because some cases are correctable.
50% of the causes of infertility are attributed to female and the other 50% is attributed to male. Some of these women who are blamed to be responsible for infertility are totally fertile. The problem could be with the husband. When women are going for fertility evaluation, it is recommended that they go with their husband such that we can be able to know who is responsible for the infertility. Is it the husband? Is it the wife?
That report about childless women was compiled by Frank Higa in Kampala. And you've been commenting on this story. Onuche Ame says, it also happens in my country, Nigeria. It's time for us to eliminate all forms of unhealthy treatment against women because in them lies the power to build greater societies.
Peter Matiang Mayom says it is the same too in my tribe Dinka in South Sudan. He means there are women who do not bear children are also despised and regarded as outcasts.
Godwin Biggie is refuting the report saying that is not true. Our laws are very clear. As a Ugandan, we have never practiced what you're trying to portray. The few incidents of domestic violence resulting from women not bearing children have been handled basing on our laws.
Shadrach Aliko says it's happening in many African countries. It is just that tradition is killing us.
Keep those comments flowing and we'll be back right after this.
Uzon. It was one of the most devastating mudslides in Sierra Leone, killing at least 1,000 people and leaving 6,000 homeless. Many are still struggling to come to terms with the loss of their loved ones, property and livelihoods. But it's not just people in Sierra Leone who are affected by the catastrophic mudslides. Members of London's Sierra Leone community held a candlelight vigil to remember the victims. Philip Warwick joined them in the grounds of St. John's Church in Stratford, East London, where they offered tributes, songs and prayers.
Hand in hand, each holding a candle, the London Sierra Leonean community came together for an emotional candle-lit vigil. Born and raised in London, a first-generation Sierra Leonean, Soraya Barr is a poet, writer and spoken word artist. She explained what compelled her to come to the candle-lit vigil.
I couldn't help but not feel overwhelmed with grief and sadness and anger at how a disaster of that magnitude has been allowed to happen. Though it was a natural disaster, there was a lot of factors that were man-made. There are people who trouble me. They fight strength and others'
misery. There are people. Another first-generation British Sierra Leonean is Asabi Hawa. She's a singer, songwriter, poet, and also a spoken word artist.
I do have friends whose relatives were affected or know people who were affected, and it's very sobering, and it's just really hard because you'd think in this generation, things like that would be able to be prevented.
Long, long time.
I know. I see you then. You get other meeting where I see you. World War Flood.
Yes, yes, I was there.
This other, it was like about
Saturday, last Saturday.
Sierra Leone migration to the UK has a long history dating back to the 19th century. Sierra Leoneans refer to their homeland as Mama Salon. Asabi explains the strong connection between the diaspora and the motherland.
That's our home, that's our mother. Sierra Leone gave birth to us, whether it was directly or indirectly, no matter how near or far we are from it. We have that connection, we feel that connection through our culture, through our music, through our food, through our relations with people.
That's why it's so important for this London group to keep singing and stay strong together.
Philip Warwick with that report of the Sierra Leone community in East London.
And now back to the comments that you've been writing about the childless women of Uganda. Christopher Emmanuel Kabaza in Zambia says, children are a gift, so it's wise to respect those who don't have children, and it's hope one day they will have them.
Referring to the case in Uganda, Vincent in Nigeria says there should be a case of sensitization and understanding to both partners to enable them to manage their homes.
Tene Raphael from Ghana says most Africans are still superstitious and religious. Some refuse to accept answers given by science. So I don't blame Ugandans. Education is the only liberating factor.
Namandi agrees with that and blames the level low literacy in Uganda, which unfortunately is still quite low.
Abdullahi from Kaduna, Nigeria says only comprehensive sexual education of boys and girls will eliminate these old-fashioned beliefs. Many thanks for your comments. Join us again tomorrow at the same time. From the rest of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyamura.
Bye for now.